What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Reign of Troy Radio. This is the CarCast. The first CarCast of the 2021 season, coming to you after USC's 30-7 win over the San Jose State Spartans at the Coliseum. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Reign of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratol.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are recording our first CarCast of the year. We've talked about this before. A little bit of a different setup for us. We're in the studio. We've recorded CarCast the last 3 years in the studio. Except for some road games and whatnot that we've still recorded in the car, but this is a new thing. I went to the game. You did not. You were at home, doing other duties with your college football job.
Fansided.com. Yes.
Yeah.
Our employers.
And so this is really the first conversation. This is
literally the first conversation we've had about this game.
Yes, this is the first conversation about the game that we can have.
Now that I'm thinking about it, you got home and we had conversations about UCLA. We had conversations about JT Daniels. We did not have a conversation
about
this game.
Labor Day plans.
Yeah.
Like those kind of things,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. We can finally talk about the game.
The game. Let's do it.
All right. SC wins 30-7. How do I put this in a very simplistic way? I think this game was, and tell me if I'm wrong, the most unsatisfying, worst to watch 30-7 game you could ever draw up if you're a USC fan. Do you agree?
Yes.
But it's complicated,
weirdly,
right? But it's complicated.
Weirdly, it was also the best season opening performance. 100%,
but like not even close, because the game was never in doubt.
Not really.
It was never in doubt.
It was like briefly in doubt for one drive when the defense cracked.
Never for a second was this game in doubt to me.
And like, well, and the difference, we're going to get into this, but like the difference between this game and past season openers is that like, the defense had it under control.
100%.
Where
yeah.
In past season openers, there were just breakdowns where you're like, the defense could open, but the defense had this under control. So, yeah. So, and in that way, it was very like SEC like, except I'm a USC fan. I'm not out here for some SEC football. And I'm not out here for USC's offense being as inept as they were. So, like, I spent the entire game frustrated by the offense and probably not appreciating the defense as much as they deserve to be appreciated. And I think that took a lot out of my experience.
No, I agree. I think that I want to give a shout out to Marcelo on Twitter, who said that so SC has gone from Big 12 bad to Big 10 bad.
Right?
Because that's what it was.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was, where this was a game where SC struggled mightily on offense, couldn't do anything on offense consistently. They could do things. They just couldn't do them consistently, right?
Yeah.
They thought they ran the ball well. Drake London looked incredible.
They were typical USC where the stats are going to be pretty okay.
Yeah.
And it's gonna look
on
like...
On paper,
this game was fine.
On paper, if you got served this game on... Someone printed out the game book.
The stat sheet to me, I would say, yeah, that's good. That's decent.
Would you have taken it this morning?
Yeah, sure. But I wouldn't have had to live through it. Which is like the problem that we're going to, I mean, okay, but my big overarching thought coming out of this game is, and you and I have spent a lot of time of many off seasons now talking about how, you know, predicting win-loss things, talking about what will it take for Clay Helton to be fired or what will it take for him to keep his job, all those kinds of things. We're always having the discussion about how it's not really about the wins and the losses. It's the eye test. It's how you look, how you do it.
This is the case in point.
And this was
a
complete eye test failure. And it sucks because it was a 30-7 win, which in other contexts, in the context of college football, this college football weekend, is pretty darn good. I mean, we just watched Washington lose to FCS Montana. Oregon couldn't put away Fresno State.
Oregon lost to Purdue. Oregon State lost to Purdue.
Yeah. Oklahoma had a scare against Tulane. Like, there were a lot of teams out there. North Carolina lost to Virginia Tech. Like, as we are always saying.
Stanford lost by 17 on the road to Kansas State.
Yeah, to Kansas State, sorry. Kansas won. You know, things happen. But, like, that's the in the grand scheme of things, this.
But by the way, Daniel Matabebe? 2 catches, 38 yards.
Yeah, there he goes. Yeah, he's doing okay. Illinois won.
No. K-State.
He's with K-State?
Yeah, Ema, baby.
When?
Since like 6 months ago?
Oh,
I've
been paying attention.
Come on.
Transfer portal's messing me up, man. But I mean, either way, the college football opening weekend was very much proof that like everybody is working out the kinks. Everybody is dealing with some rust. And all of that. So, like,
yes.
In the scheme of, like, we were just having a conversation in our text message group with the THT guys. Like, is it USC might have, like, the second best opening week of any Pac-12 team out there,
well,
bar UCLA.
And you add that, you add on, I think you can make an argument that San Jose State might be the best team SC plays in the first, at least, month of the season.
Which is a funny thing to say, like, and an indictment of the Pac-12,
yes,
but yeah, sure.
I'm not saying it's the best argument, but it's an argument, right? That you could make.
Well, they're a conference champion.
And this game might end up being one of those things at the end where if San Jose State goes 11-1, you look back at it and say, well, you know, that's good to have on SC's resume and all that stuff.
I'm going to pour some cold water on that thing real quick because we've said this about Western Michigan and they turned out to be...
Right, and we said it about Fresno State.
Fresno State.
No, 100%.
Yeah.
But this is the point, though. The point is that in a vacuum, you give every team a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in week one. You give any team that's playing a defending conference champion that returns everybody on the roster, save for a couple of receivers, the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Especially in a week one like this, coming off of the COVID season, and everybody and their mom struggled.
Not,
right?
not having Isaiah Polamalu out with COVID, Gary Bryan Jr. out with COVID.
Yes.
And Jackson injured in the second quarter.
Nick Figueroa and AC sprain in the middle of the game. Like,
yeah.
All these things... In a vacuum, in a normal situation, you'd be like, you know what? It's week one. Who cares? But here we are. It is 2021, my calendar says. We've had that same conversation. We had it last year.
Mm-hmm.
We had it the year before.
Mm-hmm.
We had it the year before that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the year before that, too.
Mm-hmm.
The year before that, I think we were in a Whataburger in like Irving, Texas, and that didn't.
That was definitely not right.
But the point is that like you should be able to sit here and say, well, it's week one, it's early. They're a decent team for a group of five opponents. And SC can work out the kinks, and they did win 30-7. The defense only allowed 7 points, and that's basically all you want from your defense anyways. Like, you can't ask for more than that, especially when you get a pick six. It's a net 0 point outing for the defense, right? But again, we've had the same conversation over and over and over and over again.
You just you don't get benefit of the doubt from me when I was asking you to pass the eye test. And defensively, I think you passed the eye test. But and that's a lot of the conversation around this game coming like on Twitter was because I was quite negative. And apologies for the negative.
You're negative?
Negativity
what?
Guy. I don't know what I'm supposed
to
say.
By the way, UCLA just scored again.
Yeah, we've got the UCLA game on the background. They're now
Ed Ogeron outclassed and destroyed by UCLA yet again. Wow!
Yikes!
It's a pattern.
Yeah, but I don't even remember what I was saying. Oh, the on Twitter, like I was talking about how this is the same old performance, and that's why it was so disappointing. And there were a lot of people who were talking about, yeah, but the defense was good. Yeah, but the defense looked good. Yeah, but the defense looked improved. And it's like, I guess everyone else was way more skeptical of the defense than I was coming in because, like, I expected this kind of performance from the defense. I think I wasn't, like, maybe my expectations for the defense were too high, but it's like, yeah, they'd look like I thought they'd look because this defense is pretty decent, and this defense has been pretty decent for a few years now. They've been hung out to dry by their offense so often that, like, I don't think we've had a fair view of this of the defense, and I think that, you know, they've been prone to giving up the individual big play, and the big difference between this game and previous games is that they didn't give up the big individual play, and kudos to them, good credit to them, but that's like a minimum ask that you should have for your defense. Like, I don't think this is like revolutionary that like, oh my gosh, USC's defense didn't give up big plays.
Well, it's the greatest defensive performance ever.
No, but like I We've seen
what we would call decent to good defensive performances before.
Yeah.
Net you or allow 80, you know.
Allow 21 points. Yeah, for sure.
Whatever. And that was not the case. Because if that would have happened again in this game, they'd probably lose the game.
Yes. Certainly if the defense doesn't get that pick six.
Yeah.
But I guess my point is that, like, yes, the positives from the defense were good, but, like, they don't come close to wiping away or matching what I viewed to be the negatives from the offense. And the frustrating thing about the negatives from the offense is, again, they got the stats, you know, the run game looked good, but USC has never lacked for good running backs. You know, the running backs are good and they all have always been good. The passing game, Drake London is freaking amazing. I've been saying it all season. All off season, he's critically underrated, like criminally underrated nationally. He is up there, I think, moving towards status as like Marquise Lee levels of dominating wide receiver performances at USC. He's that good. But when you have that kind of athlete on your team, and you have the running backs that USC has, and you have guys like Taj Washington out there looking like they were like advertised, looking great. And you've got a quarterback like Keaton Slovis, who we know can be great. Why are you only scoring 21? What was it? 24, 23 points offensively? Why are you settling for so many field goals? Why is it 13-0 at the half? Why aren't you pulling away from a team that you clearly outclass?
It should never have been this close.
Yeah.
Because
for all San Jose State is a good team, USC should have outclassed them today.
Well, this is the thing that, you know, there was a point, I think Rich Essie made a point on Twitter that, you know, it's not like the offensive line is getting mauled. And if the offensive line was getting mauled by those two defensive ends that we talked about in the preview, it would have been understandable.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not to say that it would have been okay, but it would have been understandable. Like, it would have made
sense. It
would
have been predictable. That's the point.
This tracks, right? Yeah. Like, the offensive line is struggling. Keaton Slovis can't find protection or whatever. Yeah.
Keaton got sacked on coverage sacks.
Yes. The offensive line
weren't holding it too long.
Was fine. They were fine. They weren't the greatest. They weren't terrible. And I think if you're breaking in two freshman tackles, you absolutely take that performance any day of the week.
I will take that performance every day of the week and twice on Sundays, because I've been expecting this offensive line to be an absolute dumpster fire.
Right.
And they were fine. And they were arguably better than they were for most of last season. So
yes, and yet despite that,
somehow
the offense was just inefficient in the passing game. And I think part of it for me is the reliance on the hitch and the out routes to the outside, between the hashes and the numbers, and really between the hashes, between the numbers and the sideline, right? We see it 3 times a drive. How many times did Taj Washington catch a ball to the near side on a hitch or an out route? Like a million times. Like I feel like half of Tyler Vaughn's catches in his career were that catch, right? Yeah. And so San Jose State drops a lot of guys. They dropped 8 a bunch. We saw it. It was the BYU thing that they did 2 years ago. And Keaton Slovis talked about this in the postgame. And if you do that, you take away those routes. What does this offense have after that? You take away those routes and you take away Drake London. And suddenly, for whatever reason, they forget how to get to anyone else. And I know that part of this is that in the past, SC has had so much talent at wide receiver where you've had Drake London step up because guys were covering Michael Pittman and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns, and someone was bound to be open, right?
Even when you had those guys, you were having this problem.
Yes, but still, they were able to find somebody open, right?
Yeah.
It was always, you have to pick your poison, and then somebody will be open because of it. SC couldn't do that today, and I think part of it was the focus on Drake London. I thought the focus was way too much. I think you have to be prepared for San Jose State to take Drake London away, because obviously that's what your game plan needs to be if you are a defensive coordinator going up against this team.
Yeah.
You got to be prepared for people to take Drake London away.
So triple team Drake London at this point.
Yeah. So
you need 5 guys to just tackle the dude.
Yeah. So make Taj Washington a household name. Go out there and throw to Michael Manjack.
Katie Nixon. Katie Nixon didn't have a catch in this game. Manjack didn't have a catch in this game. John Jackson, we've seen him catch passes. He didn't have a catch in this game.
Epps had one?
Epps had 1 for 19 yards.
Yeah.
And Jude Wolf had 2 for 11. It just, Eric Cromenhoke should not be your third leading receiver. You need to be getting, where was Michael Trigg? Where was Keenan Christen? He didn't have a carry, didn't have a touch, didn't have a reception. Where were the other guys that you can spread this ball around to? They're on your roster. They're there. It's not like they can't get the job done. And I think that's why I come away from this performance so negative about the offense, because it was very, very clear, like a flashing neon sign to me, oh crap, this really is a scheme problem. Oh crap, this isn't just the offensive line is so bad that they can't execute what they need. Because the offensive line was fine. Keaton Slovis has a passer rating of 144.7, 252 yards, 2 touchdowns. On paper, he was fine. The running backs averaged 5.7, 4.6 yards per carry. They were fine. We know that the receivers, that there are good receivers there, they were fine. So where were the problems? It's like you say, the scheme is predictable.
Yeah.
They go to the same targets. When they get in the red zone, they can't impose their will. And
the red zone stuff was tricky, and it's like the week one stuff where I think that, talking to Clay Helton and talking to Keaton Slovis and Vi Malapai, all that stuff, what they said after the game, on a per play basis, I think you can explain a lot of these things away, but they've been making these same mistakes for a long, long, long time. So it's not like you can just give them the benefit of the doubt that this is going to be fixed next week. And for SC, luckily the defense comes through, so this game is not a close shave, because this CarCast is brought to you by Manscaped. You knew it. You knew it would be.
It had to be coming.
It had to be coming by Manscaped here. Manscaped is where you can go. They are the king of below-the-belt grooming, which, for a game like we just saw...
If you're like Drake London and getting hit below the belt during the game... You want to be the king of
below the belt.
Below the belt.
Yeah, which means you've got to keep everything in order. You can do that with things like the Lawnmower 4.0 from Manscaped. They got ball deodorant, ball toner, all those other things. The nose hair trimmer.
Yeah, they've got the 4.0 trimmer, the weed whacker ear nose hair trimmer.
Gotta have it. Everyone has an uncle in their life
who has.
Yes.
When you see somebody that has the ear and nose hair issue.
Is it an uncle thing?
It's always an uncle, a great uncle.
Yeah. Sometimes like an old priest might have it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like it's always like
it's always the older male figure in the life, and you need to just
you got to go up
send them a signal by getting them the most awkward gift in the history of gifts. For an uncle, get him the Manscaped, the whole shebang,
right.
With the trimmer, the weed whacker, the crop preserver ball deodorant, the crop reviver toner, the performance boxer briefs, and the travel bag. So it's all there.
Yeah, and it is all there, and you can get it over at manscaped.com and use the promo code FANSET at 20 to save, what do you save, 20%?
You get 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSET at 20. At manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIGHTED 20 at manscaped.com.
There you go. Go do that over after this podcast is over. Or we can multitask too. But going back to the red zone stuff, it's really tough because I think that, on a per play basis, you can look at it and be like, well, this happened, and this happened, and that happened, and this happened. The second... time that they stalled, which is where they were running the ball great on that drive, and then they get a first and goal like just inside the 10.
That's
right?
The frustrating thing about the stalling that USC did is they were moving the ball with ease.
Yes, and then they were just absolutely stalling. So so then that drive they run the ball twice on first and second and goal. They get a third and goal, and Keaton does the thing where he immediately drops back and really doesn't even do a full five-step drop and immediately throws to Drake London, tries to get it out, a little bit of a fade, very low percentage play. But they talked about it afterwards, both Clay Helton and Keaton Slovis, that was sort of a hard count thing. They had done that in the first quarter. That was the Taj Washington deep ball. They had done that to try to get... San Jose State to jump offside, which they did, and then took the free shot down the field with the one-on-one opportunity. So they did it again, except they didn't get the call this time. And, like, okay, so I understand. At the same point, it's hard to sit here and say, well, run the ball more in the red zone. Well, they did. They did on that drive, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
But... the problems with the red zone is they get in there and they get behind the sticks and then they create the third downs. The third drive that they're in the red zone, they get sacked on first down. They try to make up some ground on second down. And then you get a third and forever and you can't get that because obviously you can't.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where I wonder, like...
It's the USC special, sort of.
It was a form of the USC special, a variant of the USC special. But is this one of those situations where, like, maybe this is the problem with using Drake London on the outside? Like, do you miss Drake London on the inside in the red zone more than any? Like it's a shame that we didn't see Kyle Ford. Did Kyle Ford even play? I don't remember seeing him at any point. But, like, it would be really nice if you could bring in Kyle Ford to play on the outside and then have Drake London on the inside when you get into the red zone, because that was one of those things that opened things up a lot for USC once they started using him in that way.
Yeah.
Or get Michael Tripp, I mean, get somebody to do that job.
Right? Something.
I just didn't see anyone doing that job. And instead what you had was Slovis sort of like keying in on London. He's blanketed in the red zone. And then that's how one of Slovis's sacks is just, he's waiting and waiting and waiting for London to get open, and then London never does, and then he takes the sack. So, like, you got to have something else going on in that play, and part of that falls on the quarterback, and part of it falls also on what are you asking of your quarterback in that situation?
Yeah, and again, it goes back to you can give the benefit of the doubt for individual plays here and there, but, like, when the same results are the ones that you saw last year where SC struggled in the red zone, and the ones that, I mean... Thing last year, remember I created a spreadsheet to talk about all the points SC left in the on the field in the red zone.
It was a lot.
They did it again today. At least 12 points.
Yeah,
and let's just say that those three times they had to settle for field goal.
Yeah,
let's just say that they converted two of those.
Yeah,
so that's 8 more points. That's 38-7.
Which is
38-7 with 2 touchdowns instead of field goals. You feel completely different about this game.
Yes, because when you look at it, like all I've been saying forever now is, okay, this air raid offense is supposed to be this high powered thing. Why can't you score even in the area of 40 points? Like, why is USC not regularly in the area of, like, they're struggling and straining to even get to 30 points in this game, and they only got it because of the defense. So, like, you got to convert those things and prove that you can get 100% up above 35 points. But we haven't seen, USC hasn't even come close to averaging those things.
Yeah, and luckily we were able to talk to Keaton Slovis in the post game. Here's what Keaton had to say about things about the red zone and the offense in general.
Obviously, you know, something we want to build on. Not our best day. Had some good things. But again, we just got to finish more drives. I think, you know, if we come out of the red zone 2 or 3 more times with touchdowns, you know, everyone's pretty happy. But we didn't, and that's something we got to improve on in the future. But other than that, you know, there's a lot of good things that we kind of pick a point at. It's a team that drops a lot and runs a lot too high. So, you know, we have numbers and, you know, it gives me the chance to kind of get us in a good look and run it. And I thought we ran the ball fairly well. Again, you know, it's probably, you can talk to Coach McGuire about it more specifically, but definitely we could do better in some facets. But, you know, you should have some, a lot of runs, and we rushed for 160, and, you know, with the sacks, you know, it's a pretty good day.
Things kind of changed the last few drives. Were there any adjustments that led to that or anything?
I don't think so. You know, maybe play calling, you can ask Coach about that. But from the player's perspective, we just executed when it counted, you know. Again, in the red zone, we got caught in a 3rd and long, but we converted and we scored. And we got caught in another 3rd down, and Drake has a big play too. So, and I think we had a 3rd down run that was huge. So, again, just converting those moments helps, especially when you get a team like this. We're going to have to string together long drives, and one play will kind of count you out when they, you know, give you the easy one. So we just have to be more consistent and kind of finish those drives.
That was great hearing from Slovis there, especially because I think he sort of hit on one of the things that is going to be a talking point of this season, because so much has been made of getting more out of this running attack, getting more out of the running backs, being a little bit more of a balanced attack. And I think that is one thing that USC achieved in this game, that if you want to sort of throw them a bone, then that's one area that I felt like they were a little bit more committed to running. They were a little bit more effective at running. I think it's worth noting that the issues with, like, backs having to, you know, fight for just 0 yards on a gain, I didn't notice that quite as often as I have in the past. It was still there at times, but I thought that the opportunities for Keonta Ingram and Vi Malapai were much higher. And it's worth noting that, you know, that 15 and 14 carries between the two of them, that's 29 carries for the two main running backs. That's encouraging, especially when they ran it as hard as they did. The question I'd have is something that Slovis hit on there, is that they were facing a team that was dropping 8. And one of the criticisms we had of this offense in the past is, they're dropping 8. Why aren't you running the ball? Yeah. Like, they're begging you to run and you're not running. And I think that's something that they did better in this game.
Yeah.
What will this run game look like when teams aren't dropping eight? Or will USC force teams to stop dropping eight at a certain point?
I think if you run the ball well enough, they'll have to. And you need to, you just need to force it. I think one of the things I want to see, I want to see the run game be able to run against a team dropping eight when Eric Kromenhoek is not on the field. And that's not a knock on Eric Kromenhoek at all. It's just a knock on it. The way SC puts everything together, they telegraph how they use the offense. And if you come out there in like 12 personnel with Kromenhoek and Jude Wolf, guess what? SC is running the football, guys. Yeah. They're running the football. And it's one thing to, you know, keep the defense in check where you're going to, you know, mix it up there and go to play action and whatnot. But SC doesn't do that as much as they as you would like. So it ends up being telegraphed a little bit. So if they're going to not put guys in the box, then run, no matter who's on the field.
Well, okay, so then I guess my question is, should I not be giving them credit for giving the running backs 29 carries? Like,
two things can be true, though.
So, like, should we have expected there to be 40 carries in this game?
You and I believe this on a, you know, psychological level. That, or life level, whatever, that you can't be upset about people not seeing the lights, right? Not having the reckoning, and then when they do have the reckoning, like, be mad about it. Like, you can't do two things. So, okay, they should have always been able to do this. Yes, that is true. And also, that they're doing it is a good thing. And good on them for finally doing it. Like, both of those things can exist. This right. doesn't have to be like, oh, they're finally doing it. This is the greatest thing in the world. But it also doesn't have to be, yeah, well, they should have done it 3 years ago, so F them for trying. Like,
I'm not saying that's what you're saying.
But also, but like, that could be a sentiment that I think could easily be out there.
Right, but maybe the answer to all of these problems that we're talking about with USC, and again, I don't know that this is the answer because I can't guarantee that if you hand Vi and Ingram 10 extra carries between the two of them, that any of those carries will come to anything, because I still, you know, don't trust USC's offensive front to sort of dominate in the trenches. So I'm not saying this is definitely the thing, but like, if that's what Slovis is saying, well, they had two high safeties and they were dropping eight, and so that opened up things underneath, well, then maybe USC needs to do a better job of exploiting those things underneath, and maybe right. USC needs to do a better job of giving opportunities to guys who I think objectively, like, I know I'm biased about Vi Malapai, but like, I think everyone can objectively look at Keyonte Ingram and say, USC's got a runner there.
Can we talk about the running game?
The two of them were great.
They were great.
It was so fun. I was actually sitting there watching this game, thinking to myself, like, man, I really enjoy watching these two guys run.
Yeah.
Vi, I enjoy the way he just fights for every yard. And Ingram, he's just one of those guys that has a way of making a man miss and being powerful while he does it. It's exciting to watch them run. And part of me would rather see them run than anything else that USC does on offense.
Yeah, I wish Dylan McCullough was around. This isn't a knock on Mike Jinks, but I wish Dylan McCullough was around a little bit. So that way you could tell Malapai to keep going after the hole a little bit or keep moving upfield a little bit, because he looks so pretty when he's moving through those holes and slithering through. And then sometimes he wants to go around to the edge, and it's like, that's not your game, dude. Like, just stick with it and take the extra yard upfield rather than trying to go 3 yards around the corner. But he was great on 94% of his runs, right? Like, it was a great outing from him, great outing from Keyonte Ingram, and we've just seen the maturity of Vi Malapai as he's gotten older. And last year he was the reliable guy too, and good to see it. And he's another person that you got to talk to after the game in the tunnel.
What was it like having a big game out there today after the long layoff?
It was great. It was fun to be out there with the fans again. It's fun to be out there with the guys. I'm just blessed to be here, so looking forward to learning from our mistakes today and taking it into next week.
You guys were getting calls on third and long and third and medium.
It shows that Coach Graham is really has belief in the run game, and he's always believed in it. It's just all about execution. So Coach Graham is giving us the opportunity to make something happen, and I just want to make sure we follow through on that and make him, you know. Thank you. And make him proud that we ran the ball.
My God, bye.
There he is, yeah.
My guy, Vi, who was running hard, and I mean, it's a hard 65 yards that he ended up with today. It's a hard 86 yards that Keonta Ingram ended up with today.
If you would have told me to guess how many yards they would have had, I would have taken the over on those numbers.
Way more than those. Yeah, because it felt like they were gaining more than that when they had the ball in their hands.
You know what? And I realize this is a stupid comment, but there were some times where, and this is the testament to a good rotation and a good duo. Sometimes you looked at it and like, I don't know which one that is.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, it doesn't help that Vi changed his number. He's messing me up.
No, but like, yeah. More so like you look at it and just the way they were picking up yards back to back.
Yeah.
Where one would come in. Yes.
It wasn't just rhythm. Just, yeah.
And it's not about the numbers thing or what they look like, but more so of like they're able to just pick up and feed off of each other. And
that was
one of the things that, yeah, and they're interchangeable. I love the split backs. I love that run in the first quarter. That on the first drive that stalled inside the red zone where they're in split backs and you have Keonta Ingram on the right side. He just has a lead cut block to really spring Vi free. I think it was like a gain of 17. And I feel like that set the tone for what the run game was going to be in the game. And it ended up being really, really good for USC when it worked.
Yeah.
I want to know your thoughts about Vi talking about the play calling. And how this relates to Graham Harrell, where he's like, you know, thankful that Graham Harrell is trusting them, but also at the same time, like wanting to prove his worth. How do you take those?
Well, I think it goes back to our conversation about like, okay, given how pleased everyone was with the run game, is 34 carries, four of which are quarterback runs, is that enough? Is that doing justice to the two runners that USC has out there? Is that doing justice to what Vi and Keonta were bringing to the table for USC? And I'm not sure it does. And again, like, I think Vi makes a good point about like they need to execute. Every carry wasn't a perfect carry, but at the same time, like, you know why I think that the reason is that we think that they had more yards than they had? Because they rushed for more yards than are on a stat sheet. Because, like, Vi does that thing. Well, I said this in the Slack. Like, Vi has more really impressive 0 and 1 yard runs than, like, anyone I can imagine.
Well, just like I was talking about, like, people knocked, Stephen Carr for dancing at the line of scrimmage.
He had to.
Vi does a thing that's similar, except it doesn't look unproductive. And yet they probably net the same amount of yards.
Because he gets his head down in the end.
Yeah, and it's weird because it looks good. I don't know that it always nets the yards. But yeah, it looks productive and he can be a lateral runner where it looks like he's gaining a bunch of yards and sometimes he isn't. That's why I think that, you know, Dalen McCullough would, I think, tell him to just run through trash and north and south and be a little bit of a straight line runner. And that might be a little bit of helpful, but yeah, I think that either way, I think it was helped by there were some negative plays, and the negative plays definitely cancel out some of those positive yards.
There are always going to be negative plays in the run game.
Yeah.
Just like there are going to be negative plays in the pass game.
But in terms of the run pass breakdown, I don't have a major issue with it. It was, 36 passes and what did you say, 30?
34 rushes, but four of those were Slovis.
Yeah, so 36 to 32, right? So, or really 40 to 32?
40 to 30.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with that.
Here's
the thing, I
really like the two back, not just the two back sets, the two back system. I think this is a good pairing that USC can work with. I think the issue today is probably number of plays more than anything.
Yes.
I think it's the variety of plays. Like, if this is a game where USC gets to the fourth quarter and they can take Keaton Slovis out, I think the run pass balance looks a hell of a lot better, because right. you're just sort of finishing out the game with the runs. So like I think you can't always depend on that, but it's I just keep coming back to, I know this is an air raid and I accept that, but like if it's going to be an air raid, and we've said this, go four wide then. Just go four wide.
Right.
If you're not going to do the four wide air raid thing, then like ride these backs, because I think they can carry you further than you think they can take you.
Or use them more in the passing game.
Yeah.
That was something I didn't think that they did as much as we've seen in previous years.
Not super effectively. Vi had two catches for 2 yards. Ingram had one catch for 5 yards.
Right.
And maybe that's a stylistic thing now, because Vi and Ingram can catch the ball, but they're not like, that's not their specialty the way that like you would look at Carr or Ken and Kristen. And right. when you don't have those guys, maybe you lose that element, but you can make up for it by just, you know, let them get their heads down and let them just roll and let your offensive line just start rolling in the run game and show what they're made of. Because we saw in this game, you know what, the offensive line, they might be made of some better stuff than we've seen in the past. So
for sure,
maybe that's something that I want to see more of, but I accept it's an air raid thing. I get it, but I do feel coming away from this, like if your three best playmakers on this offense are going to be Drake London, Vi Malapaya, and Keontae Ingram, then maybe set up your offense to reflect that. And I'm not sure that that's what
run the ball more.
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe.
To me, it's not about the numbers. It's do what's effective. And so in a game like this where the pass game was not effective for the most part, then you can run the ball a little bit and maybe open up the pass game that much more, right? Like use it to go back and forth. I think it's a little easier said than done. I know we see tweets that are like, well, if they got in the I formation and they wore leather helmets, then they'd open up the passing game that way. And it's like, that's not how it works.
But I would like, when we're talking about how USC is forcing the ball to Drake London, I do think there's an argument for, all right, force them to come up and stop the run then.
Yes.
And I'm not
because
sure
they are willing to force them to stop Drake London. Yeah. So force them to stop the run.
And I'm not sure that USC is willing enough to do that often enough. And
because,
I think that's,
you know what it is? Is you talked about it, you know, Clay Elton in the post game said that the chief primary game plan goal for this game was to make San Jose State one dimensional. I feel like we've talked about the offense the entire episode, and rightfully so. But make them one dimensional, right? Take away the run and force Nick Starkle to throw. And so that way you cut their offense in half. And you're able to defend it. Well, as long as you don't commit to the run when they're dropping the eight men every single time, then they're going to still be able to just take their lumps with the run game, right? And again, like I know this is an air raid, and we've talked about it before, SC was at their best in this offense in November of 2019. When they had no running backs and they just went full air raid and then just cut the charade and all the BS and just went after it. And that was when they were their best.
But why was that? Why was that? Because that season they had Michael Pittman, they had Tyler Vaughns, they had Amon-Ra St. Brown, and they had an emerging Drake London. So you had your four best playmakers on offense were your four wide receivers. So just go four wide. So again, like I just want to see them tailor this offense to what they have going for them. And if they're not going to put the game in KD Nixon's hands, if they're not going to put the game in Manjack's hands, then like why, if they're not going to put, I mean, again, why bother with these? Why bother with this like dream of what your offense is going to be? Go with what the reality of what your offense is going to be.
I agree.
And I think this is one of the, this is what USC lost when the Arizona Cardinals screwed USC over by hiring Cliff Kingsbury.
Because
to be
you
their
ended
head
up
coach.
With Shasta.
Because you ended up with Shasta Cliff Kingsbury. And I think that Graham Harrell is still a young play caller.
Yeah.
Graham Harrell hasn't doesn't have the experience to level to be sort of to have learned all these lessons. He's learning also, on the job, and he's probably 10 years away from being Cliff Kingsbury. And like,
and the other thing that I think that is important is Cliff Kingsbury learned under Mike Leach as a player. Then as a coach, he learned under Mike Leach and Kevin Sumlin. And so he was learning under guys who ran the same system. Graham Harrell, yes, learned under Mike Leach as a player and a coach, but now is under Clay Helton, and Clay Helton is not the air raid guy.
Yeah.
So he can't give him advice in that sense. Mm-hmm. So it's just all in Graham to make the decisions.
Well, okay,
and so as a young guy,
and he's being mentored by a guy who was never a good offensive coordinator on in his own right.
In terms of schematics, yeah. And so like I think it makes it a little bit tough there. Like if Clay Helton was an air raid coach or whatever, who could, you know, talk about these things maybe from that angle. And again, I'm sure Clay Helton knows way more than you and I know. So I'm not saying that Clay Helton doesn't know anything about the air raid, but it's just a matter of, I think, the experience of being the offensive coordinator under an air raid head coach helps so much more than now just being the guy and having to figure out the answers yourself. Because What is Graham Harrell going to do? Pick up the phone and call Mike Leach? Pick up the phone and
oh yeah, I bet call Mike Leach
Cliff
would be
Kingsbury?
Like, very happy to give advice to Graham Harrell.
Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't know what it is. It's he's got to figure out the answers himself.
Yeah. Just to switch gears really quick, because we're running late on this, but we do need to talk about the defense. We do need to at least give some helmet stickers or something.
All right, let's do it.
So, okay.
And you guys are going to call into the rant line, 213-373-1872.
1872, yes.
And tell us your helmet stickers.
Okay, so Kalen Bullock.
100%, yes. All the defensive players raved about him in the postgame.
True freshman, starting his first game, leads the team with two tackles, four solo tackles. One of those tackles was a wonderful open field tackle.
Chris Steele was asked about, oh, I love that tackle, the one that got reviewed and
yes,
then overturned.
And it was, I mean, it was,
by the way,
in real time, it was clearly short.
This is weird, but did San Jose State have a weird knack for getting like right to the sticks?
Yes.
Like there are so many times I'm like, is that short? Is it not?
Yeah.
And then, okay, it's third and inches or
now, is
or
that,
first down. Like,
is that
it was
credit?
Weird.
Is that credit to USC's defenders for protecting the six?
Or San Jose State's awareness to always get close?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. Or it was just a coincidence. Whatever. Yeah. But either way, Kalen Bullock was great on that one play, that third down stop. That was really his welcome to the show moment, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when he's thrown in at the last minute to be a freshman starter. Chris Steele, after the game, was asked about what is the most impressive thing about Kalen Bullock. And he was talking about his range. Like, his range is just incredible. He can get to anything. And he would, like, yell back to him, cover the post. And then he'd look back during that play, and, like, the post is perfectly covered. Like, mm-hmm. didn't have to worry about anything, was not a liability. That's exactly what you want to see. And I think it's going to be interesting what happens moving forward when IPM is back from COVID. What happened?
I would hate for this to be another Dorian Hewitt situation where you get a cameo appearance and you look amazing and then we don't see you ever again.
But I think that there's grounds to have a rotation in the secondary, so I don't think it's going to be a complete problem.
Yeah.
It's not like a quarterback situation where you can only play one.
Dante Williams has done a hell of a job with, and Craig Nyver, they've done a hell of a job with the defensive backs. I think
Look at Greg Johnson.
Greg Johnson looks much better than he has in the past. He got that pick six.
Greg Johnson reminds me of a little bit of Leo McQuay, in the sense, not that they're just playing the same position now,
right?
But in the sense that how their career has gone, lots of expectations coming out of high school, didn't really pan out early, got a bunch of early starts, struggled at times. You didn't know where, like, questionable stuff, injuries, like he maybe wasn't the most reliable guy on defense, and I don't know where to put him.
That nickel spot is difficult to play because
yes.
I think oftentimes you are the most likely to be the culprit on a play.
Yeah. It's a very difficult, and yeah. It's not.
It's a hard position to play, and I think that Greg Johnson has really grown into it.
Absolutely, and he looked really good today. Besides the pick six, he gets the pick six.
Yes,
which is the dagger in the game.
Yes, absolutely. And I thought the defensive line, I liked how much push they were getting up front.
Yep.
It's weird to me that like USC didn't get any sacks, and yet
I don't think they needed them.
I
saw some tweets that was like, called my dad, and my dad was like, yeah, the defensive line couldn't get any pressure, and it's like they were getting pressure on every drive. They just didn't get any sacks.
Yeah, I thought that they were doing what they needed to do to disrupt. I mean, the fact that there were three interceptions in this game are proof that the pass rush was.
What do you think of Corey Foreman?
I really only noticed him once, and it was on his first play, and he blew back the tackle, and I thought that was great.
Yeah. I was watching him, and I was. He obviously didn't get a sack, but like. And he's not like he created this big, great tackle for loss either. That's going to be a highlight play. But him and his bull rush, mm-hmm. I feel like he was very good on the bull rush to constantly push back the lineman into
to make Starkle uncomfortable. Yes. To close down the pocket. Yeah.
Yes.
And I thought that was what the entire line was generally doing. But
100%. There was one time where he did it, Tooley did it, and yeah. Drake Jackson did it, and then two of them got through to Starkle, forces an errant throw on third down, and like that's what you need.
Yeah.
You don't. It's weird, but like the sacks aren't the only thing that you can get there. The pressure still matters.
I would rather have the consistent pressure that we saw from this team today, and no sacks, than something that I think we've seen from USC a little bit more often, which is the three or four sack performance, but outside of those handful of plays, you weren't getting pressure. Like, I think this was the performance that I would prefer, even if you're not getting home. And especially because, remember, this is a veteran offensive line. There's a better offensive line than some of the Pac-12 teams that USC is going to face this year are. And to see Corey Foreman doing that to an All-Mountain West first team left tackle, like, there are lesser left tackles that he's going to face this season
100%,
that you would expect him to cause problems for.
To the thing about,
is this the best team that USC is going to play in the first month of the season?
Yeah, which is very possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
We'll have to talk about that more on the main show, the recap, but I did want to give a shout out to Drake Jackson. That the screen interception is always a fun play to see him make because he's athletic enough to make that play, disruptive enough to make that play. But I thought it was a very strong group performance.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Linebackers.
Okay.
Aside from Drake Jackson.
Hold on. Let's talk about the inside linebackers real quick. I have a theory, and I don't know if this is, I should share this theory once I've had a chance to rewatch the game and like get the. Here's my theory. Kanai Mauga and Raylan Goforth are a bit too much.
Ray Scott too.
And Raymond Scott. Well, Ray Scott, I wouldn't put in this category because I think he's just.
He started.
No. What I'm saying is the two guys.
Make your point.
Mauga. If only. Well, no. Hold on. That's the thing. USC doesn't have a Mauluga. USC has Anthony Saros. Like, both linebackers are Anthony Saros constantly.
But here's my thing.
Like, not that they're bad. They're just not.
Do they have Anthony Saros, or is this the defense in which you sit there at the end of the day and go, you know what? I don't remember seeing a middle linebacker at all. Is that by design? And not by design in the sense of like you don't want your middle linebackers making plays.
But
in the sense of other guys are just going to be more around the ball and they're taking up space in a different aspect of the game.
That might be the case, but just in general, I would rather have linebackers lead the team in tackles than safeties. And the fact that USC's two leading tacklers in this game are safeties, I don't think in this defensive performance, that's clearly not a problem because they they had a great defensive right. performance. But like, I think Mauga and Goforth are not the guys who are going to lead the team in tackles on a day on a game by game basis. And I think that when you have, I think that they can get the job done, but I would prefer a pairing that is like a Maluga and okay. a Acero or
a better analogy.
Cam Smith and a Acero or, you
so
know.
To go back to that linebacker core with Maluga in it, are you saying that Mauga and Goforth and really the what we've seen from USC's middle linebackers, not just this year, not just last year, but really the year before that and so on, is what you would have seen from like a Kaluka Maiava?
Yeah, I think we have a lot of Kaluka Maiavas going
in the
here.
Sense of like Kaluka Maiava is the steady, reliable guy.
Yeah.
But and he's not the guy that's gonna create the flashy play.
Yes, and I'm not trying to dog either of them because I think they did a fine. They're doing fine. Like they're not a liability at this point.
Right.
But I do think this defense is missing, which is why I think Bullock stood out the way that he did. The defense is missing the dynamism of the other linebacker being like that player who goes out and like makes the big tackle for loss or makes right. the big play.
Also
and
doesn't hurt that Hufanga was that guy.
Hufanga was that guy. Right? And there's, it's, I mean, it's not a coincidence that they had him playing linebacker that one time. Like,
right.
you know, yeah. that's the makeup of that core is missing. And this is why you miss Solomon Tuliapupu because he could have been that guy.
God, you know how ripped he is?
I'm sure he's very ripped. He's only been able to just lift weights for 3 years, Michael.
Like, it's like cartoonish.
Yeah.
It's cartoonish how ripped he is.
So here's my hope, is that, so Tuliapupu, like, participated in full practice for the first time this week, right? So, like, it would be really nice if by the end of this, by the midpoint of the season, he is now come into that role. But maybe we're looking at Rajon Davis there. Maybe you're looking at somebody else, but you're missing, I think what this defense is missing, is lacking at this point, is the dynamic linebacker type, the one that's going to make the big flashy play. And I think you can get by without that guy. I just would prefer to have that guy. So.
Yeah. No, that's fair. To go back to the Kaluga Maiava.
And again,
thing,
we're not being.
I think it is. I get weird and cringy comparing Polynesian guys to Polynesian guys.
I'm not trying to compare them to Polynesian.
No, I'm not saying you are. What I'm saying is, of that linebacker core, you had Maluga and Cushing, and even if you want to include Clay Matthews, those were the guys getting the big plays and getting the big sacks, where Maiava was the steady Eddie. Who maybe didn't have the highlight reel, but was going to be there reliably on every other play.
Yeah. And you need that.
You need that.
But I think you also need
And the flash. To these guys' credits, they're not... us saying that we don't see much out of them is a credit to them not getting burned.
Yeah.
It's not because they're not...
Yeah.
Because they're not there are doing worse, anything. No, they're not worse, getting burned either.
There are worse things than not being noticed as a...
Yeah.
We've seen...
It's like, this is the dream scenario for corners, right?
Yeah. You don't... I mean, the fact that I didn't have to, like, think about Isaac Taylor-Stewart is a credit to Isaac Taylor-Stewart in this game. Like...
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's how it works sometimes on defense, but... Yeah, that's going to wrap up the CarCast. Let us know what you think. Give us your calls, 213-373-1USC. Oh, wait, sorry. Do it again. Sorry. 213-373-1USC. Suck it, West Bruin Show.
Even though I was actively rooting for UCLA today, and it makes me feel dirty. Well, they got the win.
You know, you're just asking Jake to cut that.
I know. I know I am. I'm dumb. Like,
I want to have the hangar discussion on the pod. Do we want to do that now or in the main show? Let's do it in the main show.
In the main show. Okay, we're going to tease that there is a hangar discussion. That's
a hangar debate.
Random. But yeah, this CarCast is already an hour long, Michael.
I know. It's a CarCast. It's really long.
Yeah.
I went over and podcasted with Jake on Friday. Jake from the West Bruin Show. And I talked to him about the hangers, so that's what. But all right, shutting up now. Thanks. Give us your emails, We have Twitter at fansite.com as well. And phone number 213-373-1872. Until then, see ya.
See ya.
See ya.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.